Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello everyone, Ross here. Just before we start, just want to apologise. When we started recording this episode, we had a biblical storm and the rain was hammering on the roof of the loft where I normally record. So I had to quickly run downstairs and set up in the lounge, which has rubbish acoustics. So therefore, my voice sounds a little bit weird in this episode. But hopefully you can bear with it and enjoy episode 30, Night of the Demon.
Britain, an ancient kingdom with legends of violence, cruelty, and torment in its blood. Join your hosts, Ross, John, and James, as they bravely tread where few would dare. Witness their journey into the horrific history of British horror. They are the General Witchfinders.
Ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome back to, yes, the 30th episode of the General Witchfinders podcast. We've made it to 30 after an interminable time in the 20s, it seems. I'm James in Bournemouth in southern England.
I'm John Richard Pountney in South Wales, which is in the south of Wales.
Yay, and I'm Ross in Dorchester in southern England. This time we bring you the Night of the Demon.
That Professor Harrington was electrocuted. Somehow his car ran into a power line outside his house. It was a terrible accident. He must have died instantly.
What is this?
Oh, these are part of O'Brien's research, which is tied up with the Carswell devil cult investigation.
Egyptian Seth Typhon, Persian Asmodeus.
I have what is perhaps the finest library in the world on witchcraft and the black arts.
You know my name?
Oh, yes. And you know mine. I'm Julian Carswell. What is this twilight? This half-world of the mind that you profess to know so much about? How can we differentiate between the powers of darkness and the powers of the mind?
I have an imagination like anyone else. It's easy to see a demon in every dark corner. But I refuse to let this thing take possession of my good senses. If this world is ruled by demons and monsters, we may as well give up right now.
Now, this is not the 1980 James C. Wasson film in which an anthropologist and his students attempt to track down a Bigfoot responsible for a rash of violent murders. Or the 1988 Kevin Tenney film, Night of the Demons, where 10 teenagers party at an abandoned funeral parlor, of course, on Halloween, awakening demonic spirits. Rather, we all, hopefully, watch the classic 1957 British horror film produced by Hal E. Chester and Frank Beavis. Or Bevis?
Who knows?
Bevis right, and Butthead.
Okay. Yeah,
Bevis exactly, and Butthead. So Frank Bevis. I'll go with Bevis. There's no A in there.
Yeah.
Produced by Hal E. Chester and Frank
Ted
Bevis.
Ted Bovis.
Yeah.
Ted Bovis. Directed by Jacques Cat People, I Walked With a Zombie Tourneur, or Jack Turner, as the French director was referred to in the UK. Well done, Great Britain. There's some more hats off to the UK coming off in this later on. Starring Dana Andrews, Peggy Cummings, and Niall, Zeus from Jason and the Argonauts, McGuinness.
Oh.
Adapted from the M. Montague, R. James short story, Casting the Runes. And I'll be interested to hear John's thoughts on this in a bit soon. First published in 1911 as the fourth story in More Ghost Stories, which was James' second collection of ghost stories. Screenwriter Charles Bennett owned the rights to the story and wrote a screenplay loosely based on it.
Using the title
The Haunted. Bennett later regretted selling the script to Chester, as he was later approached by RKO to direct the film himself. Chester decided that the Bennett screenplay was too tame, in inverted commas, and too British, so hired Cy Edenfield, who had been blacklisted by the House of Un-American Activities Committee as a communist and forced to move to the UK. Fate worse than death in the 1950s, I imagine. Fucking hell. Like now. I mean, forced to move to the UK now. Despite his contribution, which was said to be significant, he was ultimately uncredited. Cy Edenfield, incidentally, was the writer and director of Zulu. Director Tourneur and producer Chester had serious disagreements during filming. One argument was about the wind scene. Tourneur tried to convince Chester to replace two electric fans with two aeroplane engines. When Chester hesitated, star Dana Andrews threatened to leave the picture if Chester did not let the director direct the picture. Chester also decided to show the demon at the beginning and end of the film, which we'll be talking about shortly. Despite Tourneur's protests, he added the scenes in post-production, and it says cue James's French accent. You didn't even need to put that right. I would have just done that naturally. The scenes where you see le démon were shot without moi. The audience should never have been completely certain of having seen le démon.
And I think
I absolutely agree with.
Yeah, and I feel like you can tell the film was made to be like that. You can tell.
Yes. Yes. And original screenwriter Bennett was also so angry at the script changes. He said, "If Chester walked up my driveway right now, I'd shoot him dead."
Amazing quote.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Ray Harryhausen was asked to create the demon for the production, but he was already committed to the Seven Voyages of Sinbad.
Oh.
So to accelerate the pace and make the film more commercial, a 96-minute original feature was trimmed down to 82 minutes prior to its release in the United States. This shortened version was retitled The Curse of the Demon, playing in June 1958 as the second half of a double feature with either The True Story of Lynn Stewart or The Revenge of Frankenstein. Kate Bush has said this is one of her favourite films. Oh, hang on. Is it time? Hang on.
Is it Kate Bush time?
You're in the tree. It's coming.
There you go, right? I can't play too much. Kate's lawyers get involved. But yeah, there you go. The song Hounds of Love begins with a quote from a line spoken in the film by Maurice Denham, and somewhat more obliquely, the film The Line and the Cross and the Curve, which I remember coming out kind of like in the 1990s. She did a film, and I think it had like Hugh Laurie might have been in it. I'm not sure. Anyway, but it borrows the idea that the possession of a small slip of paper with mystic symbols can confer great power, as well as borrowing several images and set pieces. Now, Night of the Demon was also mentioned in the opening song from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Poison and kills. Dana Andrews said prunes, gave him the runes, and passing them used lots of skills. But when worlds collide, said George Patton. And Ross has put, spot quiz, can John identify Peggy Cummings' convertible sports car?
No, he can't.
All right.
Okay. It might be a sunbeam.
Brilliant. Well done, sir. According to Ross's notes, it's a sunbeam Alpine Mark 1.
Right, okay. I thought it might be a sunbeam, yeah.
Yeah, called it.
Interesting.
Mate. Fantastic. Right, so.
Good knowledge.
Much to discuss on this one.
Before we start, do we say Dana as in Irish songstress from the Eurovision, or do we say Dana as in Dana Scully from X-Files?
In Rocky Horror, they say Dana. Say Dana.
In that case, Dana.
Yeah.
We'll go, all right.
Because I've always wondered, I've always struggled with Dana and Dana, because it was it Dana International, who was the...
Dana Carvey trans from Wayne's World.
Really? There's a lot of Dana Danas out there. There's more Dana Danas than...
That's good.
Because I would always say Dana Scully, but then there is Dana, and there's Dana International, the Israeli trans singer from
Eurovision
fame.
So, to both of our listeners, which hopefully neither of you will be annoyed by our shifting pronunciation between Dana and Dana. We're all having refreshing beverages as well. True General Witchfinders tradition. So, anything could happen.
And it usually does.
It does.
As Murray Walker used to say. Right. Anything can happen in Formula One, and it usually does.
He was in the New Forest for ages.
Oh, God bless him. Yeah. What a wonderful man. I'm going to have to stop now because I've got a lump in my throat.
The car in front is identical. It's identical to the one behind, except it's completely different. Right, okay, so we start off, doesn't it, with, number one, what I've put is, you don't really get voiceovers these days, do you? It starts off with a voiceover.
It has been written since the beginning of time, even unto these ancient stones, that evil, supernatural creatures exist in a world of darkness. And it is also said, man, using the magic power of the ancient runic symbols, can call forth these powers of darkness, the demons of hell. Through the ages, men have feared and worshipped these creatures. The practice of witchcraft, the cults of evil, have endured and exist to this day.
In ancient times, ancient people have always worshipped the devil and things such as that, right?
And of course, it starts off amazingly with a shot of Stonehenge.
Yes.
Which is local to us for all intents and purposes.
And I've still never been there.
I've never been to Stonehenge.
I still need to go to
Stonehenge.
You can't get as close as they do in this film, can you?
Well, I was just thinking about that. It's like, there must be like so many, so... Okay, I'm going to get this sentence construction wrong. There were so fewer people back then. It's just like, so when they're on the train, is it like
in the 50s?
Yeah, like just in the world in general, because it's like when they was on the, oh, we should find out what the population, but it just was like they didn't bother putting fences up because there wasn't that many people around who want to go up there. And on trains, like they had massive compartments with room for space people walking on there, because there wasn't loads of people on wanted to get on the trains. I just feel like the world is getting shit because there's so many people in there. And then I realised that's me starting to talk about like population control, which is
look out.
Yeah.
Malthusian.
Stonehenge now is so crowded that they've had to cattle prod people away. Like a some kind of Nigel Neal drama.
Like in Crater Mass. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I was just thinking, has Stonehenge got another name? Because Stonehenge describes what it is.
Yes, that's a good point. I don't know. Let's have a look.
I should look
it up. It is just a henge, isn't it? I don't think any of them have got real names, because the names have obviously been lost
through
time, haven't they? Deep time.
But it was good to see it. And Stonehenge always looks best in black and white, I reckon.
It looked lovely. Yeah, it looks great in black and white. Henry Moore did some wonderful drawings of Stonehenge. But what's also interesting about the start of the film, I find, It feels very tacked on with that voiceover.
Mm.
Plus the Egyptian themed music, which is very like Valley of the Kings kind of music. And it's got absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the film. But it has a brief reprise later on, doesn't it? That music,
it does.
When he goes back there again.
Great font.
It's a very good font. It's perhaps the world's most famous prehistoric monument.
Mm.
Built in several stages, built about 5,000 years ago. Together with Avebury, it's part of a World History Site. Mm.
The bit for us is, it says the etymology. The Oxford English Dictionary cites Alfric's 10th century glossary, in which henge cliff is given the meaning precipice or stone. Thus, the Stanhenges or Stanhenge, not far from Salisbury, recorded in the 11th century by writers are described as stone supported in the air. In 1740, William Stukeley notes, pendulous rocks are now called henges in Yorkshire. I doubt not, Stonehenge in Saxon signifies the hanging stones. Christopher Chippendale's Stonehenge Complete gives the derivation of the name Stonehenge as coming from the Old English words stan, meaning stone, and either henge, meaning hinge, because the stone lintels hinge on upright stones, or henson, meaning to hang, or gallows, or instrument of torture.
So maybe that was the first one to be called Stonehenge, and then all other henges were named after that one.
Like the doctor is the first person to be called a doctor.
Yeah.
And all other doctor, what a load of cobblers, I thought. That storyline.
This is, as well as our normal nonsense, this is an educational one, because tonight, guys, I'm going to warn you right now, you are going to get some philosophy later on.
Ooh.
And Anthony Flew's Parable of the Gardener. Philosophical thought experiment.
I have no idea what that is, James.
Switch off now, because we've registered this as a download, so that's all we care about.
So what are we going to... Are we going to try and rattle through the film quite quickly?
Yeah. Well, we always spend 45 minutes talking about the opening scene and then just rush at the end.
So you see, there's a voiceover, and then there's a nice font, and then we go straight to TV's Morris Denham. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you see him sort of driving through
It's really atmospheric.
Yeah.
Yes,
what I thought was, we always say this, but all the way through, I just kept thinking, Christ, if you remade this now, this would be amazing. This would be so much better now.
Mm-hmm.
This would be awesome, because the crux of it, which is a man of science up against mysticism, dark arts and things like that. That's an amazing idea, and it still works. And so it starts with that really like at night country. He's driving like at speed through the dark countryside. But then that's when it's really 50s music over the top of it.
Yes.
Now it would be far spookier with no sound whatsoever.
Yeah.
Very minimal.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you saying no, Ross?
Well, I'm saying no because, would it be better? I don't know. But yes.
It's just different.
Yeah, it'd be different, yeah. But yeah, so he goes off to the country house. Demands, starts hammering
Mr.
on the
Carswell's
door.
Well, country house.
Yes.
Yes. And demands to see the master, the butler, who we don't see again.
Tries to fob him off,
yeah.
Wilson the butler.
Yeah.
Yes. And meanwhile, his mum is playing cribbage.
Yes,
I noticed. Which is
very
that card game where you put lots of matchsticks and you move them around. Because like my grandparents played that.
So you play it at the beach hut.
Like being able to do long division. It's something that I could do as a kid. I've got absolutely no idea how I do it now. It's like, I remember playing it, but I can't remember anything about it.
All old people in old horror stories either used to play that or bridge, and I don't know what bridge is either.
Oh, bridge is you've got like four people, isn't it? And it's all really weird.
I think it's code for swinging.
It's very middle class. Well. But yes, and then after being denied him, Carswell makes his entrance. He decides that he is going to speak to this guy. And he's got a remarkable beard.
Yes.
I've noticed.
And my daughter was watching bits of it.
Kind
she said,
of picked
I,
it on.
Yeah, and this is, she said, I'm not happy with his choice of beard. And I said,
I just said,
to make him look like the devil. It's interesting that they make out this guy is the leader of a
huge
big cult. You never see any of the cult. All you see is him and his mum. That's it. You don't see
any of you meet
when he's throwing
a
kids
member
party.
Of the cult, don't you?
Oh, yes. Later in the film. Yes, one member, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, if you were remaking it now, you could absolutely have
lots of naked people.
Oh, it's a very different idea how you could do it now, because it would have to involve the internet.
Indeed.
The most evil device known to man.
Yeah. And I was thinking that if I was going to, because I have thought it through in my head how I would remake it,
of course.
But rather than.
They would have to have jelly on boobies. And that is the way you get into the.
I would make
association.
It, I'd make it that it was a podcaster investigating it rather than. supposedly someone who's. So internationally renowned as a parapsychologist, he's on the front page of the newspaper.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anyone you speak to in England and say his name, they go, I mean the psychologist.
Yeah, why not?
That's and come into this enormous symposium where he has to have surrounded by like three like assistants at all times.
Yeah,
and at one point you can say, we're going to do this all through the night because we need to get this finished. So it's like, yeah, it's just crazy.
He's as basically as famous as Roger Daltrey in about 1970, 71, yeah. Isn't he? Because he's got an entire floor of a hotel, it seems.
Yeah.
Yes.
With other international dignitaries as well. Which
The press are waiting for him at the airport.
Yeah.
is this before Roger Daltrey made McVicar?
Yes. This is, right. I'd say this is pre-Tommy.
Okay.
So it's when Daltrey's in his pomp. It's not when he's complaining about Brexit.
Is it? Or
we taught in Europe for years, you fucking morons.
Or when he became a trout farmer. Do you remember had when we went up for American Express of him holding a trout or a couple of trout in his hands?
I thought you said tramps.
No, hang on.
And with that's when he had an eye patch as well.
No, Gary Glitter hit Glitter. The eye. Microphone stand.
An event which has been erased.
Fucking killed him.
That event has almost been erased from history.
It has. I saw someone tweeted some photos from it recently, and it's got a very weird selection of people in it, like Prince Charles.
Yeah. King Stephen Charles, Fry, sir.
King Charles. King Charles III. King Charles. Daltrey is there. Townsend is there. Is someone like Frank Bruno there as well? It's just...
Yeah.
I think it was for the Prince's Trust or something, was it? When it was...
Yeah. Prince's Trust, a.k.a. Illuminati, a.k.a.
the Lizard.
Yeah. Fucking Bruno.
So anyway, first scene. Come on, we must get past the first scene.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Morris Denham comes in and says, call him off. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I wrote that article about you. You know, he apologized for writing an article about him.
Yeah.
Kind of exposing him as being this cult leader. And he's like, no, it's too late. And the good thing is that Carswell all the way through is just utterly calm throughout.
Yeah. He is
and that's what we're, he's like, no, too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like, ha, 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 or anything like that. He's just like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? And then the clock chimes and then he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I will call it off. You can leave. Because I think at that point he was, as we see later on, he was like just placating him just in case somehow he could pass the
note,
the curse.
Yes.
Yeah. No. He goes. He gets in his car, and then as he gets in his car, we see in the woods something. Yes. And to start off with, I was like, "Oh, that's quite good."
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like the
off really good.
Good.
But then when you see the demon's a little bit of a letdown, isn't it?
It is. And I've put, this film is saying fuck you to the Jaws playbook of like, don't show the sharks till right at the end. No, there's the demon. There he is.
Yeah,
bang.
Yeah,
there is the actual demon
when
this film.
When my kids were watching, they said, would that have been scary then? And they said, I said, yeah, she's scary. Would people have been screaming then? And I said, yeah. She goes, did you scream when you first saw it? I said, I'm not that fucking old.
That old?
It is disappointing that Hal E. Chester felt the need to insert the demon from Night of the Demon, singular, in more than one part of the film.
But he put it on the poster as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And he put it on the cover of the Blu-ray box.
Mad. So he sees the demon coming, freaks out, tries to get in his car, crashes into a pylon, which he then gets out of the car. They just starts rolling around in the pylon. Ow! Oh, Vic, I've fallen. There's some of that.
Into some high tension electricity wires.
And later on, they said that wouldn't have killed him. Unless it, it would, that would have killed him. Unless like, hey, the electricity look, was much lower.
We all saw a lot of kind of safety films that were shown to us as kids, featuring kids throwing frisbees into pylons, and we know full well that would have killed him stone dead.
I saw one in Stratford High School where a kid's face melted. It was girls were led out in tears by strong male teachers at that point because a kid's face had melted on screen. Imagine that, a whole a massive room full of children, like 900 children, watching a TV set the size of like a shoebox.
And people, everyone still be quiet and watch this.
Bolted to a stand in case anyone was going to steal it.
People still been so emotionally invested in it that they burst into tears. Yeah. And when it was an image the size of a fucking stamp,
it was a more simple time, wasn't it, for all of us? But yes, so yeah, that, and so that's him killed off. And then we cut to the fact, you know, the introduction of our protagonist Dana, Dana, whatever you want to say, on a
amazing model aeroplane.
It reminded me of the Earth Dies Screaming. I thought this is like very, very strong, same sort of era, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. You don't need to show the plane, do you? You know what a plane is. You just see the inside of a plane.
Yeah. Well, maybe because not many people would have been inside a plane at that point.
Maybe they would have thought it was a train or something.
Or a boat or something. Yeah.
Yes.
So yes, good he's point. An American psychologist, as Ross says, very famous, transatlantically famous, who is coming over to Great Britain to take part in a conference where basically he's going to quite rightfully debunk lots of kind of supernatural and phenomena. Basically, there's a scene in which we won't bother to spend too long on it, but basically he is then introduced to the niece of the person who's just died, who's also coming back into the country. Oh, they're on the same flight.
To say it's clumsy is doing it. So.
Yeah. It's just some kind of love story.
Here's this character, here's that character. Yes. Bang. They know each other now. And then when he arrives, I put, 50s Heathrow. It was quite nice seeing what Heathrow looked like in the 1950s.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah, just like seeing Clapham Junction train station in the 50s, which is virtually the same. Barely changed. Right, so it's like, 50s Heathrow.
And then we have like the paparazzi waiting for him as he turns up.
Well, you say that, Ross. You say that. And what I've put is, those were the days. Rather than these days, you know, you'd have like, you know, just look over here.
This way, love. Come on, love.
This way.
Right, you know, just the normal gutter press that we're cursed with in this country. They go, excuse me, sir. We're from the press. Could you spend just a few moments with us? And you're like, that's what we've lost.
Dr. Holden?
Yes?
I'm Lloyd Williamson, Professor Harrington's personal aide.
I'm so glad that
I've been able to meet you here, sir. The professor had planned to meet you here himself, but he, well...
Dr. Holden?
Yes?
We're the press, sir. Could you spare a few minutes?
What makes me news?
Ghosts.
What exactly is the function of this convention you're attending?
Investigation of international reports on paranormal psychology.
Hello, what psychology?
To say mind reading, fortune telling, spirits, and zombies.
What are your views on those people in the States who claim to be reincarnated?
Bunk. Under hypnosis, people are unusually susceptible to the power of suggestion.
Do all your delegates share your views on the supernatural?
Yeah, probably some who don't. Ask Williamson here. He'll probably know.
Do you believe those who don't to be fakers?
Let's say some people honestly believe in the supernatural.
But according to you, they're wrong.
That's right.
What about the other delegates?
Oh, please, we haven't got time. I have a car waiting outside.
One thing more, Doctor.
Yes?
Take it kind of easy on our ghosts. We English are sort of fond of them.
Sure, some of my best friends are ghosts.
As you go through security on your own.
Just breathing through and
smoking.
We get the whole, you know, he then just explains to the audience what he's doing in this country.
Yeah.
So we can sort of scan on past that.
The exposition in this film is dealt with in a lot more sophisticated way than tonight's episode of Doctor Who. Yeah. I need to point that out.
Yes. Yeah. Also,
we needed some point where the Doctor turned up at an airport and told the press what was happening.
Yeah. What's going on? And then, so sorry, I've read Holden. That's the character. That's his character's name.
Yes.
He's Holden.
Yeah.
We then had a quite remarkable sequence when he, as John correctly points out, he's rich enough that he's got like this whole floor of a London hotel.
The Savoy. It's the Savoy. I think you see it.
The Savoy.
Yeah.
Right. And then amazingly, he showers with the door open.
Yeah. Oh, that
I was like, what?
Talking
like, anyway, fellows.
Yeah. So virile. He's in the shower and then he comes out after putting a robe on. So someone has seen him naked, haven't they? And he's just like, but they've never met him before. No. So he's just like,
that's right.
Give a fuck.
Keep firing questions at me. I'm just going to have a quick shower.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're comfortable with a naked man.
We're free. What do you call it? Stereotypes. The Irish guy wasn't there. There's the Indian guy.
He's obviously awful.
A man blacked up. Oh.
No, he's Indian, isn't he?
Was he? Oh, he wasn't.
He doesn't look white to me.
It's because he was blacked up, John. It's makeup.
He wasn't blacked
up. All right, let's have a look. IMDb.
All right.
And you can't call it blacked up now, can you?
Well, yes, I think you can. Because
okay.
What would you call it?
Blackface now, isn't
it? Yeah. So while Ross is looking that up, we'll just in short, what happens is that so the protagonist Holden is then told that the person that he's come to see, the first victim, is dead.
Dead.
And he has died in mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, that's a good way to start a film, I think, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. And then he's like, look, you've got to look into it. We think that this guy was involved. We think this guy Carswell's involved.
Mm.
And he like, and again, you know, this was really good for the 50s. He's like, this is all superstition. This is nonsense. And I will prove this wrong. I'll take care of this. And then you get quite nice plot explication and demonology as they say, so what's the deal here and what's going on? And they said, well, human beings have always worshipped demons, have always had demons in their culture, and you know, Asmodeus in Persia and things like that, which is great. That, you know, they basically say that human beings have always had this idea of, you know, the dark arts and things such as that. And it's amazing that they then say that now I've already forgotten, and I've had a glass of wine. So now, we're told that, what's his name? I can't even read my own handwriting. Somebody Hobarts?
Yeah.
Yes. Rowan Hobart or something like that, isn't it?
Roland? Roland?
Roland?
It's a very
Rand. Rand Hobart.
Rand, that's it.
Yeah.
Weird and forgettable name, isn't it?
Yes.
But I've just put, it's very Toast of London.
Yeah,
it's
and
like, yeah. Ooh, the length. Rand Hobart. So yes, we're told that this guy Rand Hobart was one of Carswell's followers.
Yes.
And had they said he'd kill someone?
I think he got driven insane by what he saw and went into a coma.
They say he's a murderer, but they don't at that point say who he's murdered, and now he's gone into some kind of coma brought on
they said his brain's collapsed, haven't they? that he's just fallen apart.
Yes.
Like wet cake.
That's the best technical description.
The term, that's right. But he says, one of the guys talking to Holden says, I managed to, he also is a doctor, and says, well, you know, but before he went into total collapse, I managed to get some information out of him. And he says, here, this is what he says he saw. And he says, it's very crude what he drew.
Yes.
And I've brought actual comics with worse art than what this guy has knocked out for him. It's not very crude at all. It's quite good. He's supposed to be like a peasant farmer who's been turned to the dark arts. I was like, well, I can see what that's supposed to be.
Yes.
You know, if he'd just done a stick man, if he'd just done something like this.
No, he was definitely white. It's Peter Elliott played Professor Kumar. Yeah.
Okay.
If he'd just gone, look, I'm sorry, it's very crude, or something like that, and go, all right. Mm-hmm. But he's done quite a good drawing of a demon. It would have got on to Tony Hart back in the day.
But would he have been disappointed by Tony Hart eventually?
Ross's mum, which has been cut out of this. Yeah. So you won't know why my mum was disappointed by Tony Hart, but you can probably guess.
Guess. Right. So then he says, right, okay, well, I'm going to look into this and find out more. And then I put, brilliantly enough, he goes to the actual British Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it's great.
Just drives up outside and walks straight in.
Yeah, because what should you do in the 50s, Ross?
Still covered in soot. Still looks filthy before the Clean Air Act of the late 1950s.
Correct, yes.
Just after the great smog of 1953.
Yep.
Peace of
it looks absolutely amazing. He goes into a reading room.
Yeah.
And what I've put is, I love me a good library / reading room sequence. And I thought, in All the President's Men, when they go in and they go into the reading room, and I put Morgan Freeman in Seven.
Yeah.
I love it. When a character goes into a library and does some reading, I don't know why I like it. I love libraries anyway, and I love books, but there's just something about it. Like, yes, library sequence.
It's a very good looking library. Yeah.
Whereas the remake, they would have been looking on their phone, wouldn't they?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes. Gone, Alexa, what was...
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we find out that
cancel.
Please try that again.
Alexa, cancel.
Ross actually having to speak to.
Can Alexa hear me, Ross?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
we find out as well then that while he's hitting the books, that for poor Holden, there's one book missing that you want, and then they say also something you think, well, that would be a series in and of itself. He says that's from our restricted books that you're not allowed to say. So,
all the mucky books.
And there's only one copy of this. And I forget what it's called. It's like Why There Are Witches, or How You Can Tell There's a Witch, or something like that. Or the Witches and the Dark Arts, something along those lines. And then while he's all of a sudden, and again, this is the whole, you could almost see that if the producer hadn't gone for the big scares in inverted commas, this would have been way more psychological, because all of a sudden, boof, right there, You've got Carswell.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, hello. And he's like, you're after that book. And well, he says, I've got the best collection of dark arts books in the country. I thought, show off.
Yeah, well.
Isn't it? And he said, like.
Did he get hold of Christopher Lee's collection? Because apparently he's
very possibly.
Yeah, he had an amazing collection when he died.
Very, very possibly.
But I think this is the start of when you. Where I think the original idea of the film was put across, because he was saying, well, how did you know I was here?
Yes. And
he said, you obviously followed me from the hotel. And he said, well, no, I didn't. I just, I've ways of doing this. So, would have been, I think, would have been a better film for it.
And the note I put down is, he says, but a scientist should have an open mind to him and all the rest of it. Ow. And look out, everyone. You might want to fast forward a couple of minutes, because
it's James Randall's philosophy corner.
That this immediately brought to mind for me, there's a thought experiment, all to do with questions of theology and questions of God. And a guy called John Wisdom, first, a great name, first came up with this. But the argument was perfected by Anthony Flew. And it's the parable of the invisible gardener. And what Flew said is, imagine two men moving through a jungle, and they come to like a bit of a clearing. And one of the guys goes, oh, wow, look at this clearing. There must be a gardener at work here. There must be someone that tends to this area. And the other man says, no, it's just a random clearing. That's it. No. There is definitely a gardener at work here. So the second man says, right, fine, no problem. We'll set up camp and we'll stay here and we'll see if a gardener turns up. No gardener arrives. And then so the second man says, look, well, the gardener must be coming while we're asleep. And so the first man says, right, fine. We will now set up a perimeter fence.
I've already got in my mind the setting of Predator.
Very similar. Yeah, you got it, right? So he then says, right, we'll set up a perimeter fence with barbed wire. So if he came in at night, he'd have to come through this fence and we'll hear him. And then, you know, the next day, no one's come in. And he says, well, now do you believe me? Ah, no, you see, because the gardener is invisible. And that's how he's sneaking in at night. And the whole idea, and what Flew was saying, is that if you're a person of faith and a person that, or an atheist or someone that doesn't believe, no matter what evidence you put in front of the person of faith, they will continue to, he calls it like death by a thousand cuts.
Mm.
The idea of no matter what you say to them, they'll always go, but just that whole thing of the two worldviews of the one guy saying, look, this is all nonsense and it's all hocus pocus, versus a guy saying, there's more going on here and you need to open your mind. I just thought, Flew's Invisible Gardener argument. Anyway, so there you go. Back to the nonsense. There you are.
The bit, just to say, to pull in some M.R. James knowledge, the bit where they're looking for this missing book is co-opted from a different M.R. James story, which is the tractate Midoff.
Ooh.
So the Tractate Midoff is the book in question. And it's a part of the Talmud, I think it, the Jewish or Hebrew.
Mm.
You will know much more about this than me, James. Part of that religious text, and that is what's being looked for in the Tractate Midoff. So it's a little bit of a kind of M.R. James Easter egg, I think.
That interesting. Oh,
yes.
Okay, that's good. So while they're having this argument, he is then handed a card, isn't he?
Mm. What did it have written on it? I couldn't read
like,
it.
Only has 2 weeks or something
yes.
like that.
Mm. 2 weeks are 2 weeks are allowed.
Right, so that's written on it in handwriting, isn't it? That's where
yes, yeah. and then printed on it is Carswell's name and Lufford Court or something, Warwickshire.
Oh no, which is again really close to like Stonehenge and the Savoy in London.
No, what? Yeah.
Just pop down to the British Library in 10 minutes.
Yeah, but there's a really nice shot then when he walks off and it all goes dark and a little bit like bit of mirror on.
And he says, and Holden says to the librarian, "Did you just see that man I was talking to?" And the librarian goes, "No, I didn't see anyone."
Yeah, yes. Nice touch.
And again, nothing in the 50s, that's great. This is good. I'm enjoying this. This is going to be, and I had already had a look and seen the whole, they insisted on showing you the monster at the start. And I did think, oh my God, if they hadn't have done this would have been so more effective as psychological.
And then the written message then disappears from the car, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So then he's able to use his incredible fame and connections just to go to some kind of forensic lab and just say, "Have a look at that for me." Work out what's good. Do all these tests on that card because it's.
And it's Roger Lloyd-Pack's father who was doing the tests on the.
What was he in? We watched previously.
Oh God, he's in millions. He's in one of the Quatermass films. You might even
that was it.
Yes,
that was it.
Quatermass
was
Yes. That's when they go to the village and he's in charge of the town, the village hall.
Yes.
Yes, of course. And then Sir James gets machine guns. surely the bleakest film that we've watched.
It's
a film where Sir James gets machine gunned to death. Unbelievable. While hiding behind a pub bar.
We need to... re-edit that and put Sir James laugh over the sound of the machine gun going off.
Etc. Right. Yeah. So he decides, and I say he, sorry, because by the way,
Dana Dana.
You can cut this out if you want, Ross, but one of my things is when I do listen back to them, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, we just go he or she or they. I'm like, oh my God, the poor listener, if they've chosen not to watch the film, they might be thinking, what the fuck are these guys even talking about now? So my thing of the last few has been trying to keep more referring of a narrative tack.
And it's also difficult because when most of the films you watch are just all men anyway.
Mad.
With really forgettable names.
Yeah, so Holden decides that he's going to go and see Carswell's. You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to go and see this hidden book that, you know, I need to have a look at to find out if that, you know.
With the fancy bit, isn't it?
Just so we missed a bit out when they go to the, I don't know if it's important, but they go to the, see the body in the casket.
Oh.
And that's where he.
Well, that's how they meet.
Yeah. That's right. But what I would say is that. At some point, they say that he was hideously mutilated.
Yes.
More damage done to him than could have happened from the electrocution. But then he's got an open casket.
It is an open casket.
Yeah.
But he was trodden on by a demon.
He's
not going to look great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. So then him and the woman drive off to the country.
The woman, whose name is what, Cleves?
I don't know.
No. Peggy Cummins plays her. I don't know what the character's name is. It's very hard to follow.
Joanna Harrington.
She is Harrington's niece.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
So she is Denham, not Denham Elliot. What's his bloody name? Harrington. Morris Denham.
Morris Denham. Yeah.
Professor Harrington is Morris Denham's niece. So it's quite hard to follow all this.
Yeah. And again, as James was saying, it probably is harder for people because we tend to go back and forth between character names and actors' names.
So we're learning. We're trying.
Episode 30. We're learning.
Right. So, yeah, he then rocks up, or Holden and Joanna then rock up at Carswell's country pile, only to find, and again, I thought this is quite good, he's just doing, like, magic for children.
Yes. A kiddie's party.
Maybe think of the kid's Omen.
The party
in the ground.
Well, yes, Ross. The next bit made me think of the Omen, too.
Yes.
Is that he turns up, and this is when I've put, as I said at the start, oh, my God, it turns out that everyone that does kids' magic, it's a front for the black arts. And so the first person I thought that did specifically kids' magic was the husband of the late Victoria Wood, Geoffrey Durham, piff, great soprano. Piff, paff, poof. Get him on the pyre, mate.
Yeah.
Before he unleashes
is he still anymore. With us?
I believe he is.
73.
There you go.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Geoffrey Durham.
Using the dark arts to stay alive.
Exactly, yeah. he sucked Victoria Wood's life force out of her.
Did you just say he sucked Victoria's wood?
Yeah. Anyway, oh, so right. Made me think of The Omen with the Charles Party. It made me think of Lord Summerisle in his house with entertaining the children of the village on Halloween. But also what I liked about this is it implied that he wasn't born into that wealth. That's not his ancestral home. He came from nothing. He came from being just a child's performer to end up having all of this money. And which is, I think that's another nice touch. If you're like, okay, maybe how else could he have got this without some kind of supernatural powers?
And he then continues his philosophical argument that he started in the British Library. And the line that I put, and I've just put the word great next to this, is that he says, Sir Holden, where does imagination end and reality begin? That's a great line for 1957?
Yes.
Yes.
Delivered by a man in terrifying...
children's makeup.
Excellent, isn't it?
And then again, Holden continues to say, look, I don't believe you can do any of this. This is all nonsense and this is trickery and all the rest of it. And he says, all right then, check this out, mate. Inclement weather, which we mentioned at the start.
Full-on Omen wind machine.
Exactly, the Omen, just like we saw in the Omen when Patrick Troughton gets speared as a result of inclement weather.
Yeah,
Sir it's a similar Patrick vibe. Should have been
exactly. Yeah.
The house. I also think that the house at this point looks like the house at the start of from Russia with Love, where you see Rosa Klebb and
Robert Shaw.
Favorite actor Robert Shaw get punched in the guts. It looks very similar. I'm sure it isn't the same house, but there seems to be a lot of these houses in...
At least once or twice you've seen a country house and that's reminded you of
that. Satanic Rites of Dracula, I think, was the other one, where I thought, I'm sure this is the house.
That's the same one.
But I'm sure, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I've joined my notes now, so I've caught up with you.
Great.
So there is a very good bit in this part where the guy says, your death will be on the 28th of this month. And it's just like...
super calm.
Is it Niall McGuinness? Is that his name in this film? The guy who plays the great soprano?
Oh, Matt, sorry, I've got it here.
Carswell.
Yeah, Niall McGuinness, Dr. Julian Carswell.
He is absolutely excellent, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I think he is the hinge that this whole film kind of... works on, because without him, I think Dana Andrews is actually quite wet and a bit useless in this film, isn't he?
Well, he's apparently he was a surgeon in real life, and that then went on to become an actor, and then went back to being a surgeon again afterwards.
A talented man. But I feel bad for his mother, I've written at this point, because the mother is a bit of a foil for him, isn't she?
It took me a little while because I thought she was maybe being a double, a double bluff, because I think, but it just was, she was a nice person and didn't like what he was doing and was trying to warn people about what was going on.
Yeah. mother. Do you think he murdered her in the end? Because she disappears from the narrative, doesn't she?
Essentially, yeah.
So maybe she was done in as well. Maybe she had a slip off him.
So after he kind of shows him the book, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That he wants to see and says, see, look, I've got it. And again, more kind of threats and the meat of the film, which is, and of the M.R. James short story, which is that if you have a piece of paper with these symbols on it, it's like a magnet for this demon. And it's like a curse on you. You will die. And he kind of stresses this to him.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you still don't know what it says, because he said, there's a cipher on this. You will never, even if I gave you this book, you'll never be able to read it, because only I know the code in order to write that. And I thought that's great.
Cool. That was great. And then so he and Joanna head back to London. And what I've written is, you know, in the great tradition of many of the films that we've watched on General Witchfinders, is I said that even though he's going to die in 48 hours, this isn't his concern. Fine. He's an absolute swordsman. He's just like, well, you know, you can have sex with me. It's Joanna. That's why he's like, why not? I would be like, Jesus Christ, I'm going to die in 2 days. How about you come out for dinner with me? And Jesus Christ, man, get your priorities right.
Yeah.
You look at least 30 years younger than me. So how about we go out for a drink?
So yes, hats off to him for that. That was great.
But he's left the Irishman and the Indian guy and the other chap just to run this conference, which he's come over to do.
Hang out in his floor of the Savoy. I've got two points of order that I enjoyed. Carswell does a good speech to his mother where he says that nothing is for nothing. And that there is a price to pay for the luxury they live in. And there is a price of fear with what they're doing. But also there's a really great bit when he goes back to the hotel, Dana Andrews, Holden, and he's walking down a corridor and you get a very similar trick to the one that Jacques Turner plays in the famous Cat People film, where he does like the first jump scare, which is in Cat People, it's a woman who's walking down the street and can hear footsteps and thinks it's the cat woman following her. And then a bus turns up and the noise of the bus is like a cat hissing. In this, you get a very similar effect where he's walking down the corridors and then the Indian guy opens the door to him and he jumps.
Yes.
And I thought that's a very similar stylistic trait.
There was a couple of sort of modern jump scares in this. Like when the kids in the trick-or-treat mask jump out from behind the tree.
Yes.
And the tree.
And that's basically invented by Jack Turner in Cat People.
And when Holden goes back and breaks into the house, the hand comes into frame.
That's very good.
That's very modern and good.
Yeah. So where were you, James? Because you're whizzing through.
Sorry. It's just because at the start.
No, it's admirable, because otherwise it would be
it'll be hours. Right. So
it takes longer than the film.
That's right. What Holden says is, I need to go and talk to the family of Hobart.
Yeah.
The guy whose mind has collapsed and all the rest
of it. I'd forgotten about these people at this point. Yeah. And it took me a while to understand what was going on.
And, you know, basically speaks to them, find out, because it's like, well, the more information I can get about him and how he works, the more chance. Because again, I mean, Holden's whole thing is like, this is all still trickery. Even after him producing the inclement weather and all of that.
Yeah.
And the storms, he still's like, this is trickery. This is a cover. Again, great story.
My notes don't make any sense, and I'm sure there's bits we've missed. And I've written stuff that makes no sense. Flirty dirty. What have I written?
I think that's when there's by the fireplace, and he was like basically like saying,
I'm gonna die in two days. Yeah.
So have we talked about the convention? Because I thought the convention would be quite fun if they were all doing cosplay. The psychology convention, if they were all dressed as like
Freud.
What's it, Gangsters of the Universe or whatever
Like in comics. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Gangsters of the Galaxy. I've invented something new there, haven't I?
They all just dress as Holden apart from the one Indian man. Everyone else is just looking the same.
Also, at some point within this part, there's a quote from The Ancient Mariner,
yes,
which is in turn a quote from A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad.
Whoa.
In the M.R. James story, I noticed where a fiend is following you and you look behind, blah, blah, blah. So that's another little, Easter egg there for M.R. James fans.
But it was interesting that they referred to him as Montague R. James in the
in the
titles, wasn't it?
Monty, yes. Montague. Rhodes. So he's named after Rhodes of Rhodesia, I suppose.
Yeah.
Carry on, James.
Okay, thanks. Right, so he says, okay, well, let's go and check out the Hobart Farm. And then what I put is, what a lovely, typical, warm English welcome he receives. Get off! Go away! Just get off our land! I was like, this is actually accurate.
Yeah.
Standing with a spade in a load of overgrown stuff, which is, there's no holes, nothing has been spaded. He's like, I need to talk to you.
Go away! Yeah. But when he does actually get in, so I put, a typical warm English welcome. But then after that, the scene is quite cool.
It's by far the best scene in the film for me. I love this scene. And I wish this scene was the rest of the film.
Oh, and when they went in there, I was thinking, is this a set? If this is a set, how much effort they went to just to make this one room?
It's great. It's really good. Scene.
And it reminded me of when, what was the one we watched? Warning to the Curious, sort of like the way people were dressed.
It's very similar,
And the bit when he goes to the house, that looked like the house where the girl was outside. And
with the dog.
Yes. Yeah, it was good.
I'm from London.
So he then speaks to the Hobart family, and we get more information really about how he operates.
But this is where we learn that you can give it back to someone, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yes, that's right. And then we actually see, and then they go, oh my God, you've got the message on you.
He pulls it out by mistake, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's in his
wallet.
Yeah.
Cigar case.
Oh, we should have said that when he first read the note, that the note came out of his hand, was trying to destroy itself, so it couldn't be passed on to anyone else.
We have whizzed through some important parts.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So they have discovered that he's been passed this in the British Museum, haven't they?
Yes.
When they were being flirty and dirty by the fire, and then tried to fly into the fire. Also, a good bit that we've missed is when they find that his diary entries have been ripped out after the 28th of that month.
Yes. But never explained. So that's nice as well. You know.
It doesn't need to be explained.
No, exactly. But it's good because it hasn't been explained in this case. Yeah. Unlike lots of other films we've seen where stuff should have been explained.
Yes.
The idea of was that supernatural or someone being into his room?
Or
one of the three men in there or one of them in on it? You know, that's.
Mm. No, it works very well.
Mm.
The farm scene is my favourite scene in the film. And I wish that you'd see more of this weird inbred family.
Yeah.
They deserved a sequel all of their own, basically, didn't they?
But I also love the fact that this guy who's like an acolyte or part of this came from this very sort of like strange, dark, you know, mysterious countryside people. It wasn't the case of like a lot of things you see where the cults are all made up of like the rich.
Yeah,
like it's Satanic Rites of Dracula.
Well, they're village idiots, basically, aren't they?
Yeah.
How has he won them over?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, Ross.
Yeah.
There's a lot
I should going point on out the village film. Idiot is a phrase that was used in the past to kind of qualify stupid people that you met.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know if young people know about phrases like that anymore, but my mother would point at someone and say, that's the village idiot.
Somewhere a village is missing its idiot.
Yeah.
Yes! Another part that's a kind of pivots on this scene is that he needs the next of kin's signature to do some kind of thought experiment on the man's name that I've forgotten. Who's played by TV's Brian Wilde.
Yeah.
We might as well say now is Foppy Hobart. From Last of the Summer Wine.
Number one.
Is it?
It is.
Yeah.
Hobart.
Yes. So Hobart is
TV's Rand Hobart
Foppy from Last of the Summer Wine.
So yes, he says to the family, if you give me permission, I can do because I'm the world's leading psychologist.
Yes.
I'll be able to do my super hypnotherapy on him and I'll be able to get him to talk and we'll be able to get more information. And they're very reticent, but then they concede. because they're kind of aware that, I said, you know, he's got the curse on him at the moment and what have you, and that he's been chosen, they say.
Yes.
So
yes,
as
yes.
John says, it's a really good scene in the film, and it's almost like brilliant. They know, they have a deeper understanding of what's going on.
Is it at this mm-hmm. point you learn that at one point he'd been cursed and he passed it back to the person who cursed him and killed them? Or do we learn that in the hypnotist?
I can't remember. It's basically his brother, we find out, isn't it?
Right.
But we never know why the brother has tried to curse his own brother.
Mm. But again, and then, it's just deliciously horrible, isn't it?
Yes, but then we all, yeah, and I can't remember, you are right. We then find later on that he's passed it back on to his brother and his brother has died.
Yes, and that put him into a coma because it was so horrible what he saw.
Yes, yeah.
Again, James, you are right. This is brilliant. Yeah, you could do this really, really frightening now. All of that, that stuff is just horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he goes back via Stonehenge to wherever he's going.
Brilliant. Yeah. Does some robbings.
Yeah, to have a quick look at the inscriptions on Stonehenge. And then I have jumped straight to a seance now, which I thought
that's
was
the next sequence.
Excellent scene. So is that the next sequence?
It's great.
Yeah, yes. He gets called by the...
By the mother
to say, could you come and
see Carswell's mother?
Yes, Carswell's mother. Yeah. Sorry. Could you come and see these people so they could help you with this whole affair? And it's, again, a lovely sort of 50s sort of terrace house, spooky spiritualist.
And he says, and once again, Holden gives it the whole, these things are all nonsense. It's all, they don't work. And, it's all a myth. It's all a hoax.
But I think one thing is nice here as well. The bad guy, sorry.
Carswell.
Is kind of right that he's showing a very closed mind. He's very not having anything to do with this. Let's just leave. You know, he's not open to learning something. Even if the whole thing is all hokum, he could find out more about what's going on if he was if he stuck around rather than just dismiss everyone.
Mm. And then we see like the Mr. Meeker, which made me think of, is that the name that they took for Rent-A-Ghost?
Yes.
Because that it's Mr. Meeker and Rent-A-Ghost.
Yes, it is. Yeah,
brilliant. Any excuse to talk about Rent-A-Ghost. So yeah, so the medium Meeker turns up, and then we see that he can, if nothing else, like obviously in the film they have different actors speaking.
Yeah,
very much like what was the one we saw with the medium who was talking with the voice like this? Oh, what was it called? The haunted house or something?
The one where he had fake legs.
Yes.
The twist was he had fake legs.
Yeah. He was a short man with fake legs.
Yeah.
Is that the house on Haunted Hill?
Something like that. I can't remember.
And then
Haunted House on Haunted Hill.
He then says, I am going to turn into, I'm chanting, there's somebody else here.
Yes.
And it's the guy from the start. It's Joanna's uncle. And she says,
it's Derek Katora, Sam.
It's Sam, yeah.
Right. And she says, that's my uncle. And Holden is like, nonsense, that's not your uncle. And then you get, it's time for it again. Then you get this.
She in the trees. It's coming.
Awesome. Right, yeah, so it's in the trees, it's coming. Yes. So he kind of reenacts his death from the start.
Mm. So he's a real medium.
Yes.
And that's what we, the viewers, are made party to.
Yes.
He's legitimate, isn't he? Which is interesting. Yeah. Again, is an interesting part to this film.
Mm.
That you should be credulous. Is that the...
Yes.
Am I right to say credulous?
Yeah. He then decides...
he's going to go to Carswell's medium, house at that point.
Yes, right. The medium says there is the what you need, the book that you need in order to undo this.
Yeah.
It's in his house.
Yeah.
And you can go and get it. And he's like, right, I best go in. And he decides that he's going to break in under cover of darkness.
Yeah.
Conveniently, there's a window open for him to climb into.
And does he go with his lady friend? She's there.
He does. And she's like, he says to her, stay in the car. But then when she goes in, and then we have this scene of him creeping around the house at night. And as creeping we were saying before, creeping Jesus. And then the way that it's shot and filmed is that as he's walking away and creeping around the house, a hand keeps coming into frame, thus suggesting that there's somebody following him.
Yes.
Which is nice and creepy.
Yeah.
We then see that there's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then this cat somehow transforms into
a leopard
and starts attacking him. And what I've written is, it's very akin to the attack of the bats in that really bad Dracula one that we watched.
No, it's even more like, again, the bat suit. It was called The Legend of Hell House, where they get attacked by a cat and that. Remember that?
That's right. And they're just holding the cat.
Why put something like this in a film? Because it looks so bad if you're just throwing a stuffed cat around.
Which is what's happening.
It's very embarrassing, and it's a bit of a weak point, because the rest of the film, I'd say, is very strong, really. And
absolutely.
That is a joke.
No, I was just going to say, because, and then after he's thrown the kind of cat demon, cat leopard away, Castle just walks in and goes, oh, you're all right. He's not like, what are you doing in my house? Yes. How dare you? He's just like, oh, having some trouble there, are you?
The way he plays it is excellent.
Fantastic.
Yes. Mm.
And he's like, what's his name? And he says, that's just a minor demon that you were just fighting there. There's lots of them.
Mm.
And, you know, and again, that's really cool. That's always really great. And then he's like, I'm going to get the hell out of here. And then he says to him, if I was you, I'd go back via the road.
Go
through the woods. And he warns him not to go. And I'm going to go back the way.
Yeah. I always go back the way I came.
Go back the way I came. Weird.
Yeah.
Right, and then as he
lives
to
regret it, though, doesn't he?
Holden goes out into the woods, and then he gets chased by the massive demon.
Well, you don't see the demon at this point; it's just a ball of smoke and light.
You do see it briefly.
I don't think you do. I quite like the effect, because it's almost like the smoke is playing backwards, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they do a really nice thing.
It's a very good effect.
Yeah, and they superimpose that, and they've also got some tree silhouettes of trees in the foreground
in front. It
gives like a real sense of depth and stuff.
Yes,
very well.
I think that effect is excellent. And then when you see the close-up of the demon later, you're just like, oh, God. You do see the demon's footprints appear in the ground.
Yeah.
And how do they do that?
That was very
because they come in, steam comes up as well, and I thought, how do they do that?
I'm not sure. Well, it would have to be someone under the ground pulling it down, surely, in some way. Yeah, it would be really difficult to do.
Probably something really toxic to make that smoke come up as well.
Asbestos. So they go and see the coppers now, don't they? And the coppers don't care, basically.
Yeah. At 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Apparently. And there's just like police, like the boss policeman is just in there as well at that time in the morning.
To be there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. How interesting. Yes, yes.
And they go, do we have to take this? Okay, we will take it seriously.
Yeah.
And then they just leave. They have an argument, don't they?
Well, the girl who is called Peggy Cummins' character, please.
Fuck, I gotta keep that window open, haven't I? Sorry.
Joanna, I think she does her best, Peggy Cummins does her best with an underwritten part to make it as feisty as possible, because Dana Dana Andrews all the way through is as patronizing as possible to her, isn't he, basically?
Yeah.
And there's a bit where someone says, you needn't argue with a woman who has made her mind up.
Our times have changed.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ.
For the better, of course. Yeah. So we then build up to the finale wherein he decides, and just help me out here, guys, in terms of, I know he's like, I've got to intercept him, or I've got to get to his house. Well,
the sequence that happens now is
the mother rings him, doesn't she?
That's right.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that's what I've not made notes on.
Foggy gets hypnotized.
Yes.
Yes.
So basically he said, I've had enough of this bullshit.
That's literally the script. I've had enough of this fucking bullshit.
That woman's not going to sleep with me, so I'm not interested in her anymore.
We need
to speed up this conference, and we're going to do it all tonight because I'm leaving because I don't want to do this anymore.
I believe it now. I'm filling my pants.
Yeah,
I want to go back to America.
Yeah. So they have a late night demonstration.
Hypnotism session.
Get Foggy in.
Yeah.
So they get Foggy in from TV's Last of the Summer Wine. In an ambulance, which has got a literal bell on the front of it, which is ringing.
Yeah. That's an ambulance.
A Daimler ambulance, which is like...
Why would they be ringing the bell? It's not an emergency, is it?
Well, they just want to get there quicker, don't they?
Yeah, so they take him into the hospital. All these men in suits are sitting there smoking while What was he using to reflect the light into the guy's eyes?
Like a weird,
I thought it was a lighter or something.
Oh, it looked like a weird like piece of metal, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like words and stuff. But basically, they used some really dodgy drugs injected into
methamphetamine. They said we were going to put methamphetamine into
it. Nice.
What? And what is methamphetamine? Is that...
It's just meth.
Crystal meth.
Oh, really?
As in Breaking Bad. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you're going to bring this guy out of this coma using crystal meth.
No meth, yeah.
TV's foggy for a
moment. In crystal meth binge, shocker.
He's got no memory of compo whatsoever.
Or sliding down hills in baths. Of
course. So yeah, they bring him round and he basically goes ballistic, doesn't he?
Yeah, jumps out the window.
So they
it's brilliant.
They haven't done a risk assessment.
They have not.
And it all goes wrong because he has a flashback and then he runs and jumps out of a window, doesn't he? Which is actually quite shocking, I think.
Yeah. But then the guy's like, oh, I'm out of here. You know,
literally.
Do you need to talk to the police? No.
But you just hypnotized him out and he's killed himself.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few ethical guidelines we've crossed here.
I bet his mum signed this paper, so it's fine.
So, fine. And they're all peasants.
Yeah.
So, it's the 1950s.
Like, I need to get to the train station. I can't remember how he knows he needs to get to the train station, but...
Well, I think...
Peggy Cummins has been kidnapped at this point, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And you don't really...
The mum of the cult leader rings
Carswell.
Him up, rings
oh,
someone
yes.
up. Oh, no. He tells it's apparently the Indian guy knows and tells him.
Yes, the Indian, apparently. Yes. So, the Indian guy says, blah, blah, blah. And he says, well, I'm going to go to his house now. And then the Indian guy says, well, he won't be there. And he says, why won't he?
He's going to Southampton. Well,
he rang me. He's going to Southampton. Why he rang him to tell him that he's going to Southampton?
I think it's a case of that, again, he needs to get as far away as he possibly can to stop him passing the note back to him.
Yes.
But why would you then tell someone who knows him where you're going?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mad genius taunting him. Yeah. It's like a serial killer. Stop me before I kill again. Isn't it? So,
yes.
Then this is the historically accurate thing, is that he then says... when is the last train to Southampton? And he intercepts it at Clapham Junction, which for any of our foreign listeners is often in films, especially the first one that comes off the top of my head is like Thor the Dark World, which all finishes in Greenwich, where I used to live for a couple of years, where he ends up and gets on the tube at like by Embankment. And he's like, is this the tube for Greenwich? And the people go, yeah, it is. And he gets from like Embankment to Greenwich in 10 minutes. It's like, mate, it's going to take you longer than 10 minutes, Thor. So at least this is something which is actually historically accurate.
Yeah.
That he says, where could I intercept the train to Southampton? Because it would leave from Waterloo Station in the middle of London, and then it would go via Clapham Junction.
So he runs in. Railway station, he said, when's the train to Southampton? He said, it's in the station now. He buys a ticket, runs in. The train is leaving at this point, and the ticket guard lets him.
Yeah, still
punches his ticket.
Yeah, I'll get on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get on there now. It's leaving. Jump on the moving train.
Yeah.
And then there's the police on the train, but I've forgotten who the police were, and I thought these were members of the cult.
I thought they were the journalists. Right. From the start. I was like, are they back?
That the coppers had gone on the train with Peggy Cummins.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, it'll all tie up nicely. But now then you see that Carswell has got on the train with Peggy Cummins.
Hypnotised her.
Hypnotised her. So that's a bit of a turn, isn't it? So, like, why is he taking her with him?
Just so they can all be together at the end.
Mother's disappeared.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's very strange. So then we have the excellent scene where basically you see that our hero, Dana Dana, is trying to pass the slip back to a Carswell.
Yeah.
In numerous ways. Yes.
There's lots of excellent ways where he refuses.
A cigarette.
He's like giving up smoking.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't want his matches back because he says, I don't need them anymore and stuff.
Here's your book. You've dropped your book. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then what happens then? I think
he tries the police come on and he goes, oh, this is my stop, and tries to get off the train.
Yes.
And then in the rush, he gives him his coat and he slips it
into his pocket.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he says, you've passed it to me.
Yeah. And then a very clear piece of fishing wire, starts pulling the note down the thing, and he's chasing the note, trying to grab it so he can give it back.
That's excellent. That bit's excellent. If you watch and it in low resolution, you probably can't see the fishing wire.
See the fishing wire. And I think now, if they were doing it, they kind of suggest, once again, we have the, the demon then turns up. But,
like,
it looks like it could be a train coming towards him.
Yes. Yep.
And if you were doing it now with a whole, is it real, isn't it?
Yeah.
You would have, the light of the train coming towards him. Yes. So as he goes one way towards him, suddenly the demon is coming down the track towards him.
Yeah.
But as he turns around behind him, a train is coming the other way.
Yeah.
So he's stuck between the proverbial rock and a hard place.
And he dives out of the way, and then a man in a demon suit picks up a doll and starts waving it around.
That bit. Yeah.
I love that bit.
I did too.
Yeah. That bit is savage. Really effective. Yeah, because that's really savage. And that demon looks totally different to the demon you've already seen.
Yeah, I think the other one's a model and this one's a man in a suit.
And looks much more effective and horrifying and less like just like a pig or something.
Yeah.
And then he basically just drops him on the floor, and I'm like, wow, that's brutal.
That's
like a giant demon has like slapped him.
So, and then they
waved him around like an action man.
And they get off the train, and other people look at it and going, wow, that's way more damage than a train should have done to someone. And he's going to have a look, and then.
Well, he's smoking, isn't he?
Yeah. Like- And then someone, Dana Andrews, goes to have a look, and then the woman said, it's better, sometimes it's better not to know. And again, which would have made sense if they'd never shown the demon, that it's better never to know if it was real or not.
Yes.
And then it ends.
Yeah.
So that's more of an ending than we've often had on Jeremy.
Yeah. It
ties up
very nicely. It's an exciting finale.
Yeah.
Right. So what do we think? What marks are you going to give it?
John?
I think for me, it's a solid
3.5. Right.
Okay. I think there's a few things that let it down. Like seeing the demon right at the start is annoying, isn't it?
Mm. Yes.
And I think the writing of Dana Andrews' character is very sloppy because he's just, there isn't a character there really, is there? It's just, he's got nothing to do. And you don't have this real sense of peril because he's such a drip.
Yeah.
Because for most of the film, he's just like, well, I don't believe it. So, you know, it's not going to happen. Whereas in the short story, that sense of menace comes about an awful lot quicker. I think 3.5 out of 5.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to give it a 4.5, actually.
Whoa!
Because I think for the time it was made, I think it was brilliant. I think it's one of those films where that you think that I don't expect a film from this age to be this good and have this scary and this dark.
And I agree, Ross.
Yeah, and I just think that if you've got to give it that context, I would definitely recommend this to people and say really enjoyed it.
And for me, it's I'm going to be in betwixt you two. It's a 4 for me. That was going to be my score.
This is high scoring. Yeah. Does this fit into our top 5, Cleves?
Yes.
And so one more time. Let's face it. It gave us this.
It's in the trees. Coming.
Right.
First time. Right. Afraid of what might be. Hiding in the dark. Hiding in the streets. My brother looks like Kenny Everett. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but Kate Bush's brother does look quite a lot like Kenny Everett.
Does he?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Hang on, let me find a picture for you. Because there was a really good BBC 4 documentary on Kate Bush. They repeated it.
Yes, no, I remember.
Right.
Brett Anderson talking about
it. Yes. Yeah.
And a lot about Hammer Horror, one of her songs, Hammer Horror, isn't there?
Okay, so I'm just quickly adding this into our master spreadsheet because we're going to talk about one sec. So we just.
Well, I was going to say, is this going to not nudge something out of our top 5, Cleves?
Okay, give me 1 second. So I gave it 4.5.
Listener, this is really like breathtaking stuff. This is happening live that we had our top 5 to debate with you tonight.
Yeah.
And this is happening live now. So I think that top five might change. Is that right?
Yes, it is going to change. All right, wow. 1 second.
Wow. This is happening live. Oh, he does, doesn't he? Was he in a band or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how, you know, he was like a great influence on her and things like
musical
that.
Musical family.
Mm.
Okay, 1 second. Please bear with me.
Okay. Dave Gilmore, big mates with Dave
Gilmore,
Lloyd Fane.
Okay.
Remember the child in his eyes, allegedly, and all of that.
John gave it 3.5, so how did that affect John's...
Meanwhile.
This is happening live, listeners.
Okay, 1 second. What's it called? Night of the Demon.
So top five. So are you going to run down each of our top fives, Cleves?
If you give me 1 second, I'll be able to tell you what I'm going to do.
And then there's an aggregate top five that we're going to... Okay. Are we going to decide then what the knockout champion is so far?
Yeah. Okay, wow. Right. So what I'm going to do, I can give you our top five as all together.
This is like X Factor now, isn't it? It's like when the points are being counted.
I'm like, okay.
Are we going to get to go through to the judges' houses?
Yeah.
I want to go to Sharon Osbourne's.
These have been...
Nicole Scherzinger for me.
Wow. Independently adjudicated.
Yes.
Okay. So adding all the scores up from all of us, we've got some joints. So in joint fifth place, we have Sapphire and Steel with Simon Thor.
Interesting.
Okay. And Ghostwatch. They got 11.5 points. So they're in joint fifth place.
Okay.
In joint fourth place with 12 points, we have Night of the Demon and the Stone Tape.
Yes, I would say that's fair.
Yeah.
In third place, we have The Omen.
Oh,
with 13 points.
Yeah.
In second place, we have The Signalman and Warning to the Curious. We gave 14 points. And the only thing we've given top marks for 15 points was Nigel Neill's The Road.
The Road.
The Road. Interesting.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Do we still agree with that? Interesting. I'm not sure about Saffron Steel being up in the...
No.
Well, I wasn't big on it. You guys
so what was Saffron and Steel, what was that equal with, Cleves?
With Ghostwatch.
No, Ghostwatch is far superior.
And we got Quatermass 2 sixth place. So I think...
Oh, I would say for me that Quatermass 2 is much more favourite.
Mm.
Mm.
So
interesting.
I can tell you the bottom five as well.
Tell us the bottom five.
Okay, at fifth worst was the abominable Dr. Fibes. Which had
an absolute stinker.
3.5 out of a possible 15.
A stinker.
Okay, our fourth worst film we've had to watch is Scars of Dracula, which we gave 3 out of a possible 15.
To be honest, I'm fonder of Scars than Dr. Fibes. To be honest, I really haven't enjoyed one film that we've watched with Vincent Price in.
I agree.
Which has really surprised me.
Well, hang on. What was the one we watched? The Oblong Box.
I quite enjoyed.
That only got 5 points.
That was mental. The guy with the face from the high carpet.
Yeah, that's that was 7th place on our list.
Oh, go on, Cleves. Okay, we're into some real stinkers now. Okay.
Personally, I disagree with this. But
you would.
An American Werewolf in London was third worst. That got -1.
Yeah.
So this
a momentary shout out to our friend, listener of the show, Chris Catlin, brilliant musical talent, Yards, who messaged me to say that John and I were wrong about American Werewolf in London. He said it's amazing. So I said, fair enough.
No, fair enough.
I know. I didn't enjoy it. I just wanted to give him due respect there.
All of these ones at the bottom have been completely ruined by John disregarding scoring.
Minus a million.
Minus points. The second worst thing we watched is Extro, which had minus 8.
Oh, for me, that was awful.
Minus 8 points. I agree. I think that's the worst thing we've watched. The worst thing. And can everyone guess what the worst thing on the list is?
On three. One, two, three.
The
Hellraiser.
Rats. No, the Rats.
Really? Hellraiser wasn't in the bottom five?
No, Hellraiser was joint sixth place.
God, I hated Hellraiser.
No, the Rats. With minus 9.5 out of a possible 15.
That's off the James Herbert.
And the Rats is by by far the most downloaded episode we've ever had. So many people. Yeah. If anyone
loving it.
Yeah. If I ever put the rats on Twitter, it gets downloaded. Yeah. So that's the most loved.
That James Herbert fan base. They know our names and addresses. Yeah. It's just a matter of time.
Someone demanded on YouTube that we remove our disclaimer about it having outdated. Opinions. One of the comments, because we have our podcast on YouTube as well. One of our episodes has been banned in Russia, by the way.
Yes! In your face, Vladimir Putin.
But someone demanded that we take off our disclaimer about outdated opinions and stuff on that.
So we've been banned in Russia. Did you just
One episode has been banned in
Russia. That's amazing.
Yeah. Right.
I feel like I've achieved something.
So our winner is The Road.
Yeah. So from 30 episodes, we go from the rats as Nadir to the road being.
So I think I still agree with that.
Yeah. The Road's brilliant. I've been told so many people to listen to it.
It was very good, wasn't it? So so really Nigel Neal is our kind of hero of this podcast, isn't he? Yes. Because he's.
Well, Nigel Neal and M.R. James, because we've got the Signalman. That's Dickens. I mean, so the Warnings of the Curious. And Night of the Demon in the top five.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And then, but Extro, I think Extro is worse than the Rats, and it's worse than Hellraiser, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's just so really
all
long,
and just abjectly awful.
Yeah,
It was on TV the other night. I saw it was on like Horror Channel or something. I thought, shall I watch a bit of that? And then I thought, no.
Yeah, but if we want to say what's dead in the middle. If you're looking for your absolute sort of
golden mean, Aristotle would put it.
Yeah, would be Dracula 1972 and Frenzy.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I'm quite fond of those. I mean, Frenzy, I remember watching and thinking, actually, this is much worse than I remember. I'm not thinking of Frenzy. I'm thinking of Deathline when I say that.
Well, Deathline's right down the bottom.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's just,
I didn't enjoy Deathline.
Just after the Abominable Dr. Fives Deathline.
Oh, really?
It got worse than Hellraiser.
Wow! That's the weird
scene where Chris Lee just comes in for no reason.
I can't agree with that. Okay. But I think The Road is a worthy winner, isn't it?
Well, I can go through our top and bottoms individually. So
you can.
Yeah. My worst was the Abominable Dr. Fives, which I gave half a point. I gave four things 5 out of 5 myself. Ghostwatch, Signalman and Warning and the Warning to the Curious, American Werewolf in London, and The Road is my top. John's lowest was Hellraiser, which was ungraded. He didn't even give it a minus score. Followed by The Rats at minus 10, Extra at minus 9, and American Werewolf at minus 8. And The Wicker Man gave 0.
Oh, I hated The Wicker Man.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten we'd done that. I found that so charmless.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whereas, besides Ingrid Pitt and Brett Eklund,
Are hymns, though. I was thinking the other day, because I went through and I found that I'd downloaded the cover of the Come and Praise hymn book. And I was
that was good
when we were all singing hymns on it. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
So James is worst. James only gave one thing a minus score, which was The Rats, which he gave minus 3.
Yeah.
He gave Extra 0.
Yeah,
and he gave Dr. Fives a 0.5 as well.
Wow,
yeah.
For just the nutsiness of the set design and things like that. That was
But James's top scoring things, the only things he's given 5 out of 5 was Never Trust a Rabbit, the short stories by
I like him.
Jimmy Dyson.
Stand by it.
Quick Mass 2.
Yeah, yeah. Much better than I was anticipating.
And The Road.
Honestly, James, 5. The Road, excellent.
Yeah, and The Road, yeah.
Okay. So Nigel Neal is the big winner tonight, isn't
he? Nigel Neal and M.R. James, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, great. Yeah. Cool. Great. I can only concur with that.
I popped a thing up just again because this is our 30th anniversary. I popped up a thing on Twitter to say if anyone's got any questions they want to ask us.
Oh, God, really?
I missed that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's probably having to do my dad's mobile phone top up for him. Which is one of the things I have to do now as our roles reverse as everyone gets older. Oh, can you put £10 on my phone for me? Yeah,
okay, so we're only answering the ones you want to answer. It's the same person. So our listener and patron subscriber. You can subscribe.
Yeah. Hey, on Patreon. thank you so much.
We don't put that as much as we would like to put on there, but there will be, we do put stuff on there every so often. But yeah. If you want us to carry on doing this, it's always going to...
It helps keep the wheels turning.
Yeah, and it makes me feel really, really guilty if we haven't put anything out. So then it makes me do stuff. So, please subscribe on Patreon. If you just go to generalwitchfinders.com. So these questions are from Alan Begg.
Nice one, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan Begg, who is living in sunny Scotland with his beautiful girlfriend. He likes movies, watching sport, and going to concerts.
There we go.
And he's a member of the SNP, which is probably the only sane
political party.
Political party in the
Welsh Labour are quite sane.
Oh, I love that clip of
Draco.
Yeah,
yeah, amazing. Isn't
that was
it?
Brilliant. Yeah,
yeah, he's brilliant. I've met him. He's a really lovely man.
Cool.
RT Davis is an absolute twat.
Mm. What are each of your top five non-horror films?
Oh, Christ.
Can you think of that? The films I was trying to think what I've watched most often. Probably what I've watched most often is With Nell and I.
Mm. Yes, great choice.
I really love Went the Day Well, which is a British war film. It's made during the war, which is about German soldiers kind of coming undercover into a British village. And that's excellent, with Thora Hurd machine gunning Nazis. God, there's a lot of films that I mean, my favourite stuff. Oh, is it non-horror?
Non-horror, yeah. But I'm struggling with it.
I mean, yeah, I do watch an awful lot of genre stuff, because I was going to say then like The Signal or whatever, but obviously that's all horror, isn't it?
Mm.
I do like The Battle of Britain. Is it called The Battle of Britain?
Mm-hmm.
The film with Ian McShane and Laurence Olivier and all those about the Battle of Britain. That's quite good fun.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any others off the top. Mm. And like Star Wars films, probably,
of course.
Empire Strikes Back, I've seen loads.
That goes into a separate category for me.
Yeah.
I can't judge them as individual films. That's all part of an overall loveliness for me.
Yeah,
but
if
you want to, I've just put down six here off the top of my head, which is number one, of course, the Coen brothers, The Big Lebowski, which I absolutely love. Number two, This Is Spinal Tap.
Mm.
Number three, Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049.
Mm.
I love them both, and I love them both equally. They're both wonderful. Number four, left field, Alex Garland's Annihilation, which I think is one of the great underrated, just absolute genius film. I thought about it for so, so long after I watched it. I love it. Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas. I've seen that film so, so many times, and it never stops being fantastic. And then finally, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting.
Which James. I like. So that's just, there are more, but just whilst being asked off the top of my head here today, those would be some of my choices. Okay. Obviously, like things with a bit
it's
of
hard
a,
to choose, a, isn't it?
Mm, it is. It is. It's really hard.
And I just know people are going to ridicule all my choices. The only things things that come off the top of my head, Sound of Music. I will always put Sound of Music.
What the fuck are you on?
I think Sound of Music is a brilliant film.
Jesus Christ.
If you would have said to me, right, James, write a list down. What is Russ going to say? I would be here until at least 4 or 5 in the morning before I got anywhere near the Von Trapps. Russ, you've never told me that.
I think Gail Trapps.
We were 12 and you've never told me
that. Well, the thing is, I'm trying to think of things which aren't horror, and yeah, that knocks off loads of my
films. I must say that I also love the Star Trek films, Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 6.
I saw two in the cinema the other last month.
I missed them. I didn't know they were in the cinema, and then I missed them.
Because I'd never seen two in the cinema, and it was great. Yes. It held up really well. It's terrific. Anyway,
gutted.
Yeah, I think Gail Von Trapp is one of the coolest men who ever lived.
Okay,
I was trying to think what else. I think I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I think that's a good comedy. Oh, fucking hell.
I do like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but is that a horror film? I don't know.
No.
Bugsy Malone. I think Bugsy Malone is good. A lot of musicals in yeah.
It's really hard
not to speak to, which isn't a horror movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Time Bandits, I love that.
Alright.
Oh, Life of Brian.
That's good.
I love Life of Brian. Yeah. I can't think of anything. Bumblebee was good.
Literally.
Oh, what did you go and see the other day? What was that animated thing you took the kids to go and see?
Oh, Lyle Crocodile. That made me cry. Into the Spider-Verse. Is that, I can say that.
Yeah.
That's a good animated
one. Well, Cleaver, give us some other questions now.
How do we all meet?
Well, through the shithole that was Howard Gardens Art College in Cardiff.
Yeah. Well, that's how you met us, John, isn't it?
That's how we all met.
The three of us met together.
That was the crucible of
Witch Finders.
Yes.
Yeah. So essentially,
Ross and I were best friends from school. We were at school, secondary school together from 1989.
Yes.
1989.
That's when we met. Yeah.
Wow.
And then Ross went off to, I went to university in London. Ross went to art school in Cardiff.
Yeah.
And then I would go down and visit him and hang out. And then that's where I met John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's John is absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's
where I can remember seeing John for the first time. He was pretending to drum in Tommy's bar with lots of rings on, surrounded by a few girls, which I fancied. And I was feeling quite jealous of him because I was thinking,
and so it's continued.
Yeah. I was thinking he's really cool. Girls are talking to him.
Do you want to know what year that was to make you feel really old?
96. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought you looked really cool as well, whatever he was wearing. So you had, and for some reason, it's classic me. I went to university, I got the day it started wrong. So everyone else had met each other and I rocked up thinking it was the first day, but they'd already been there for a couple of days.
We had a meeting, which is called the Icebreaker.
Right.
Which was in a room which wasn't on the floor of our course. Mm. And then when we went onto the floor of our course, it became apparent that we had no materials, no paint, no brushes, no easels, no canvas, no paper. Mm. And we had a load of studios that didn't have walls.
Yeah, but there was a skip nearby, which we could go. Yeah. Which we got everything we needed out of the skip in the building next door.
And I just look at how students behave now, how education now has become so, commercialized, and students now are customers.
Yes,
and I just think of what we were like, and we just had bits of paper and graphite powder.
Yeah.
And we just sat there and didn't say anything, did we?
No.
We didn't say boo to a goose.
and lastly, have any of us had a spooky experience that you generally think was supernatural?
Oh, that's a good one.
I would love it if the answer was yes, but sadly no.
No. Cleaver, have you got one?
The only one's come to mind, something that happened to me today where I thought someone's...
Ross, your whole house is haunted, mate.
Yeah, your house is quite haunted, Cleaver.
But the one that's come into mind is a Twitter avatar. The eyes were glowing red. And I was going, that's cool. That you can put animated GIFs in Twitter avatars now.
Yeah.
And then I looked at it and then the eyes stopped glowing red. And then it wouldn't do it anymore. And it was, that's very strange. So
that's very odd. The only one I can say is, and I was there, but I was as a baby, so I can't remember it, that I was in a pushchair with my mother and my nan, and we went to look round a house in Pontefract.
Oh.
When I was a baby, and we went to the front of the house. The estate agent wasn't there, so we went to the back of the house. And both my mother and my nan could see a woman and a boy in a sailor suit in the window waving.
Ooh.
So they went to the front of the house because they thought someone had got into the house. When they got round to the front, the estate agent was there unlocking the house and there was no one in the house.
Mm.
And both my mother and my nan swear blue murder that was the truth. Because they both saw the same thing in the window. So it's not a case of, matrixing or whatever Zach Bacon's calls it.
Thank you very much for listening to us for 30 episodes plus other bits and bobs.
Yes.
That was good fun. And happy Halloween, because this would probably be coming out
on or
around Halloween. So that's great. So
right.
The actual Night of the Demon. So next time on General Witchfinders, if I can convince John to do over 30 episodes of this podcast. We will be watching The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires.
With Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
TV's Peter Cushing.
I'm writing that down now.
Doing some kung fu.
It's a film I've never knowingly wanted to watch. But it is a hammer, so I'll give it a go.
Let's give it a go. So you've never seen this one, John?
No, never seen it.
All right, let's give it a go.
Just the thought of Dracula meets kung fu, was a bit of a step too far, I thought.
All right. Well, maybe episode 31 would be a step too far.
Too far.
But until then.
Canonical?
Yeah.
Is it canonical?
And how will that affect the leaderboard? Who knows?
Oh. I don't think it's going to graze the leaderboard in the slightest, Cleves.
Until then.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening, as always. Stay safe, everyone.
Happy
See you
day.
Next time.
Love, light, and peace.
You have been listening to The General Witchfinders. Support the show and continue the conversation at patreon.com/generalwitchfinders. Subscribe and spread the word at generalwitchfinders.com. Farewell, and don't have nightmares.
Sorry, I had to mute myself then while I farted.
Okay, that's all right.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.